It's been years and years and years that we've been waiting for it. That's years of people being fired, years of people being harassed.
I'm not one who switches on likes in Facebook, but you've got a couple of same-sex guys kissing. Do you like that? Well, that makes me want to throw up.
The larger goal was to just tell the world, you need to know who we are and what we went through.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A Colombian judge consents to a gay couple's marriage proposal, an effort to pass ENDA returns to the U.S. Congress, and a blog and a book were both born this way. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 13, 2013. A judge in Colombia has decided that a gay couple can legally marry, and they will apparently be the first same-gender couple to do so in the South American nation. After a couple identified only as Diego and Juan petitioned Carmen Lucia Rodriguez Diaz, a civil judge in the country's capital city of Bogota, to legally recognize their relationship, she defended the viability of marriage for gay couples in a 5-page ruling issued on July 11th. She said that lesbian and gay couples are entitled to the same rules laid down for opposite gender couples in the nation's civil code, and set July 24th as the day for Diego and Juan to solemnize their union in the presence of two witnesses. Colombia's Constitutional Court in 2011 said that same-gender couples could legally register their relationships with any notary public or judge after June 20th, 2013, if the country's lawmakers failed to extend to them by then the same benefits heterosexuals receive through marriage. A bill that would have done that died in the Colombian Senate in April. There's been considerable confusion over the 2011 Constitutional Court's ruling because it didn't specifically include the word marriage. Some notaries have cited their religious beliefs and flatly refused to register same-gender couples in any form. Others have issued solemn contracts that are similar to an agreement between two people when they buy a house together, but that's far from a civil marriage. Other legal efforts to implement the Constitutional Court edict are already underway. Analysts expect the issue to eventually wind up back at the High Court for a final determination.
Accidents do happen, but they're still cleaning up the mess in Costa Rica. Three same-gender couples in the Central American country are suing for the right to wed after lawmakers accidentally approved marriage equality legislation on July 1st. Outraged conservative legislators who voted for the amended bill without reading it demanded that President Laura Chinchilla issue a veto, but she refused. Several constitutional lawyers, however, say that language in the bill doesn't necessarily open the door to civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples. They cite a provision in the country's family code that specifically prohibits the marriage of two people of the same gender. The three couples were scheduled to appear in family court late this week to apply for legal recognition of their relationships. One of them, Fiorella Bruno and Ana Cristina Binza, told local media that they want access to civil marriage because it would include hospital visitation rights, spousal benefits for public health insurance, and inheritance rights for their son, and that we're doing this for him. But in an interview with the daily newspaper La Nación, the Roman Catholic Archbishop of San Jose, Hugo Barrantes, called the legal union of a gay or lesbian couple unnatural and accused minority groups of imposing themselves on the majority.
Waves of lawsuits continue in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling on June 26th, overturning a key provision of the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, and letting stand an appeals court determination that California's marriage equality banning Proposition 8 was unconstitutional. DOMA had barred the federal government from recognizing the legal unions of lesbian or gay couples. The High Court decision grants more than 1,000 federal benefits of marriage to same-gender couples who've tied the knot in states where they're legal. Those rights range from Social Security benefits and taxation, for example, to spousal health coverage and inheritance. As we reported last week, several legislative and judicial efforts are already underway to bring those rights to more U.S. same-gender couples. The advocacy groups Lambda Legal and the American Civil Liberties Union, separately or together, pushed for marriage equality in four more U.S. states just this week. The two organizations asked for summary judgment in the lawsuits they filed in May on behalf of 25 same-gender couples in Illinois who want to get married. The Illinois Attorney General's Office, the Cook County Clerk, and State's Attorney have each concluded that the marriage equality banning law in the land of Lincoln is unconstitutional.
The ACLU filed suit this week in a federal court in Pennsylvania on behalf of 10 same-gender couples challenging that state's equality banning marriage law. The suit also wants the state to be forced to recognize the marriages of lesbian and gay couples who were legally married outside of Pennsylvania. Democratic State Attorney General Kathleen Kane announced late this week that she will not defend the law in court and will refuse to defend the other named defendant, Republican Governor Tom Corbett.
The ACLU is also taking on North Carolina's marriage ban. They've amended a federal lawsuit filed against the state last year on behalf of six same-gender couples and their children that challenges North Carolina's ban on second parent adoptions.
The ACLU and Lambda Legal have also targeted Virginia as a state to push for marriage equality through the courts. A pending lawsuit there is reportedly in the planning stages.
Elsewhere, hundreds of LGBT people and their allies marched in the 12th annual Kolkata Rainbow Pride Walk in India on July 7th. Political signs and speeches focused on India's rampant violence against women. Parade participants wore colorful, rainbow-hued costumes and makeup and danced and chanted their way from the Jatin Das Park metro station in South Kolkata to the centrally located Academy of Fine Arts. Many carried banners that read, "What is normal?" and "Yes to sexual diversity, no to sexual violence." Organizers said that this year's event attracted participants from neighboring regions and from as far away as the U.S. and Africa. The Times of India counted about 1,500 marchers.
A regional court in Russia declared on July 10th that the rough arrests of some 60 people at an attempted LGBT pride rally in St. Petersburg were an illegal violation of their right to freedom of assembly. Everyone who participated in the June 29th rally was taken into custody, and some were beaten. The ruling was the first positive news out of the country since President Vladimir Putin signed laws criminalizing so-called homosexual propaganda and banning foreign same-gender couples from adopting Russian orphans. St. Petersburg police claimed that the rally was unauthorized, but the court noted that the organizers proved that they had obeyed the law by notifying authorities about the event beforehand. The court also said that it was impossible to then declare the event unauthorized after it had already gotten underway.
Israeli authorities had previously called the 2009 shooting rampage at a weekly youth group meeting at Tel Aviv's LGBT center an attempted revenge killing gone wrong. The prime suspect in the attack that left two dead and 11 injured, Hagai Felician, was finally identified and arrested last month. But he reportedly told an undercover officer planted in his jail cell that he was under a biblical edict to attack homosexuals. Felician was charged this week with murder and attempted murder in what the prosecution is now calling a hate crime. The indictment says that Felician, his face hidden by a mask, entered the building on August 1, 2009, with the intention of shooting center founder Shaul Gannon, whom he suspected of molesting his 15-year-old relative, and anyone else there, out of hatred for their sexual preferences. According to Pink News, authorities questioned more than 1,000 people during the four-year investigation that's been called the most expensive in police history.
As some have long suspected, a new study released this week says that homophobia is rooted in a fear of unwanted same-gender sexual advances. The research was conducted by psychologists Angela G. Perlot and Stephen L. Newberg. Their conclusions appear in the journal Social, Psychological, and Personality Science. The researchers used a sample size of 533 heterosexual-identified college students, asking them to reveal the extent to which they believed other groups of students, same gender, opposite gender, and bisexual, would be interested in having sex with them. Perlot told the Huffington Post that, "We began exploring the idea of a sexual interest mismatch, that the sexual interests of the perceivers and their perceptions of the sexual interests of the different sexual orientation groups differed." Newberg noted that the patterns of prejudices map on nearly perfectly with perceptions of unwanted sexual interest. They said they hoped their study would add to the dialogue about what causes homophobia. Most other studies about homophobia's roots focus on gender role deviation and religious beliefs.
And finally, when Ernst & Young, one of the biggest accounting firms in the world, decided to rebrand itself to what its publicists called a strengthened and modernized image as EY, they must not have researched the name very well. As Gay Star News reported this week, EY Magazine is the name of a Spanish magazine aimed at gay men that features plenty of young guys posing in their underwear. The magazine started off as Electric Youth, until, just like Ernst & Young, they thought the name EY worked better. Country singer Miley Cyrus's ex-boyfriend, Justin Gaston, posing in red briefs, was a notable EY cover boy in 2008. A spokeswoman for Ernst & Young, which has a strong corporate record in support of LGBT equality, told the gay news site that the company was aware of the magazine in question, adding, in an understatement, that it will be apparent to individuals looking for EY, the professional services organization, that the images are not related to us.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 13, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
In late-breaking news, a marriage equality proposal has cleared its final hurdle in Britain's House of Lords, all but assuring that same-gender couples in England and Wales will be able to tie the knot, the BBC says, sometime in 2014. We'll have more on the story next week. Coming up later on this week's program, U.S. televangelist Pat Robertson meets late-night talk show host Conan O'Brien, sort of, and a blog births a book that we're both born this way. If the Employment Non-Discrimination Act could ever make it through Congress, it would prohibit most U.S. employers from firing or denying promotion because of a worker's sexual orientation or gender identity. Efforts to pass some form of the measure, known as ENDA, have been stymied again and again, but it may have gained some steam this week when it passed the Senate's Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee in a bipartisan vote of 15-7. Alice Olstein of Free Speech Radio News covered the hearings in Washington.
All Democrats on the panel and three Republicans voted for the bill, with the remaining Republicans either voting against it or not showing up. Speaking to a packed hearing room, committee chair and Iowa Democrat Tom Harkin called it a historic day.
Over the past nearly half century, we have made great strides towards eliminating discrimination in the workplace. And we still have a long way to go, but our country is a far better place because of laws barring discrimination based on race and sex, national origin, religion, age, and disability, among others. It is time, long past time, I believe, to also to prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity.
This committee had considered and rejected this bill several times over more than a decade, and the only version to pass out of any committee, which happened in the House in the mid-1990s, did not include protections for transgender workers. It went on to fail in a floor vote, as did every version introduced since. While more than a dozen states have passed some form of workplace protection for LGBT employees, no federal laws have been enacted.
So it's been years and years and years that we've been waiting for it. That's years of people being fired, years of people being harassed.
That's Heather Kronk with the LGBT rights group Get Equal. She called Wednesday's vote exciting, but objected to the special exemptions written into the bill for religious organizations and small businesses. These measures would give houses of worship, religious schools and hospitals, and any business with fewer than 15 employees immunity from claims of discrimination from LGBT workers. Kronk said this exemption sends a mixed message, as these employers still have to follow laws regarding race, age, and other factors.
You're not allowed to discriminate on the basis of these identity characteristics, but if you're gay or if you're transgender, then it's okay.
Kronk and other LGBT rights advocates also expressed concerns that the bill could get worse. The top Republican on the committee, Tennessee Senator Lamar Alexander, announced Wednesday he plans to introduce several additional amendments when the bill comes to the Senate floor, including one concerning what he called the problem of shared facilities. Mara Kiesling with the National Center for Transgender Equality told FSRN why she finds the amendment hostile and hateful towards transgender workers.
You know, every civil rights struggle has had a bathroom component, and everybody gets all worked up about the bathrooms. And I understand some people are a little uncomfortable with that, just as they were uncomfortable decades ago about gay people in the bathrooms, just as they were uncomfortable about people of other races in the bathrooms. And United States senators should know better. They should know that the point of this bill is about allowing people to work and to thrive and to feed their families and et cetera. And that's what this bill is about. And saying employers have to keep trans people but don't have to allow them to use any facilities is just, it's nonsense. It's not well thought out and unworkable.
Despite these criticisms and concerns, both Kiesling and Kronk emphasized the importance of getting some protections passed as soon as possible. Kiesling said her organization has struggled for years to document and respond to what she called a million little tragedies.
We really do get calls multiple times every week from people who have been fired as teachers, as firefighters, public servants. We're releasing a story today of a woman with a master's degree in sports management who worked as the assistant manager of an ice skating rink. And when she transitioned, she was fired. I've talked recently with a trans woman who in her school was the teacher of the year this year. And a month or so ago, she told the school that she was going to transition over the summer and come back as a female teacher. She was the teacher of the year, and they fired her.
After Wednesday's vote, Senator Harkin said a full vote on the bill isn't likely before Congress's August recess, but he plans to push party leaders to bring ENDA to the floor this fall. Alice Wolstein, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
A collection of personal stories becomes a Born This Way Bible. But first, U.S. televangelist Pat Robertson has a problem with certain images he sees on Facebook. But late-night talk show host Conan O'Brien had a simple solution.
I was reading today, I just happened to be reading in Leviticus, and there's a list of sexual sins, and has to do with sex with an animal, has to do with adultery, it has to do with other types of sexual misconduct, incest, etc. And it also has to do with homosexuality. And he said it's an offense. It's an abomination for a man to lie with a man as with a woman. That's what it says. And those who do that in the Old Testament were stoned to death. God goes on to say that the nations who were doing these things were vomited out of the land. So the land was upset by it, and the land vomited them out. That's what it says. And for some reason now, the Supreme Court has said homosexuality is now a constitutional right, and we went into homosexual marriage. This decision that was handed down recently by the majority glorifies this activity and talks about the civil rights and all this. Well, the Bible didn't talk about civil rights. It talked about this was an offense against God and the land. It was an offense against the land, and the land would vomit you out. Read it, 18th chapter of Leviticus. Get your Bible, read it, see what it says. And which is going to take precedence, the Supreme Court of the United States or the Holy Word of God?
When we like things on Facebook, if it's something that goes against what is written in the Bible, such as pictures of same-sex couples, is that considered condoning the behavior? How do you explain this to new Christians or youth?
Well, I'm not one who switches on likes in Facebook, so it's hard to say, but what you're saying is, yes, I like this kind of thing. You've got a couple of same-sex guys kissing. Do you like that? Well, that makes me want to throw up. But if you think you punch, to me, I would punch vomit, not like.
I'm not sure that option's there. But
they don't give you that option on Facebook.
You all heard about what televangelist Pat Robertson said. Pat Robertson said that he wishes Facebook had a vomit button he could push whenever someone posts a picture of a gay couple kissing. course, the other option would be for Pat Robertson to stop searching online for gay men kissing.
Neither Conan O'Brien nor televangelist Pat Robertson mentioned other so-called abominations described in Leviticus for which Robertson himself could be stoned to death, like wearing a blended fabric suit or eating shellfish.
I'm walking through life in nature's disguise, yeah. You laugh at me and you criticize, yeah. Cause I'm happy, carefree, and gay. Yes, I'm gay. Ain't no fault, it's a fact. I was born this way, yeah. Now I won't touch you, don't you touch me.
Most LGBT people know exactly what Carl Bean is singing about. It's the same thing Paul Vitagliano has been blogging about, and now it's a book our correspondent Angela Brooks wanted to ask him about.
The blog happened from a concept that came into my head about 3 years ago for a project where it actually was envisioned as a book. That was how I envisioned the project. And the idea is we all have photos from our childhood that sort of captured our essence as gay kids. But what's the story? What's our story? Because we tend to not share those stories, even with our gay friends. Most of us kind of tamp down what we went through as kids because, you know, 9 times out of 10, we have bad stories, or we have stories that at the time when we're growing up, we can't really put into words what we are. Other kids have already put those words in our face, and they're usually, you know, fag, dyke, queer, pussy, homo. They're always sort of negative. They're not really positive. And because I feel like a lot of what we go through as gay kids, I don't think straight people really understand how different it is when you're a gay kid. You know you're gay. You know you're different. You may not have the word or the definition, but it's inside your head right away. You know, you're really cognizant of something about me is not like, you know, the boy next to me in my kindergarten class. We're very aware of our sexuality. Now, not the sex act, and this is something I've had to sort of battle in terms of what I'm doing with this project, because it's not about sexuality per se. It's about innate knowledge and innate attractions. But so, the larger goal was to just tell the world, you need to know who we are and what we went through and what our experiences are, because I think it'll give people a better understanding of those struggles, really, for the most part, and the confusion and the shame and a lot of times the guilt of our growing up experience.
Yeah, when you talked about that and looking at the book, the pictures are what really stood out to me, because looking back on pictures of myself, I think, wow, how did I not know that I was gay at 5? Look at how my mother dressed me, or look at what I was doing, sort of thing. And so it was very interesting. So how did you transition from the blog to the book? It was going to be a book from the get-go, but what was that transition like?
The original concept was a coffee table book. And actually what I really wanted to do when I had the light bulb moment was a book of actually just famous gay people, because I felt like that would be more powerful for gay kids reading it now in terms of like aspiration. You know, if they could see what Ellen DeGeneres went through, or Harvey Fierstein, or Greg Louganis, or Neil Patrick Harris, or Martina Navratilova, like these people that have gone on to do really incredible things. You know, for a gay kid now who might want to be a singer like Adam Lambert, or want to play tennis or any of those things, to be able to see that someone ahead of them who's sort of a hero and someone that's been a vocal person in the gay community, like they went through the same things that these kids are going through now. They were just a kid like them. That was the original idea. I didn't do anything with the concept. I just sort of sat on it. I told a few friends about it because I knew it was a great idea. Didn't do anything with it, but I told some friends, like, you know, I have this idea. So in the fall of 2010 is when the news started to happen about all these LGBT suicides. And it was like every day there was some news story of a kid that killed themselves. You know, my blood boils a lot when I read the news and see the news as a gay person, especially things that are anti-gay or that hurt kids or hurt our community. And I just felt like there's got to be something. What can I do? These kids need some kind of message. You know, I made it through. Believe in yourself. Stick with it. So for this, because the only image you see is the child, again, I think it has a resonance with a kid reading it now. I think they are like, oh, wow, that's a kid like me.
In the book, too, you have people from lots of different religious backgrounds.
Right.
From all over the United States.
Yeah, different all over the world, really.
Yeah, different ethnicities. So it does really put a face that, like, hey, there is a whole group of people out there that experience something maybe similar to what somebody's
right.
going on. And again, I think the visual images of the book really kind of drive it home. There's some really great photos in there.
If the photo tells a story, that will make them want to dig in to the text or to the real story that is accompanied with a photo. And so I think you're right. It really, the photos really draw you in. I think then it's the stories and the words of you know, the actual growing up experiences that really resonate with the reader.
It's a really great book.
Thank you.
Paul Vitagliano's book is called Born This Way, and he was interviewed by Angela Brooks. You can go to bornthiswayblog.com to share your own Born This Way story. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Tanya Kane Perry, and Angela Brooks contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride and to Alice Olstein and Free Speech Radio News. Carl Bean performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is funded by the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org for mugshots of the crew, links to our blog and our Facebook page, and a lot more. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2MTM Kunambo, New South Wales, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, Free Radio Asheville, North Carolina, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please stay tuned.